Again, thank you, Rabbi Krohn, for a beautiful speech. I can see you put dozens of hours into the preparation, and no wonder so many thousands of people are able to benefit. I've been asked to speak on a very difficult subject tonight, and that subject is, how do we find meaning in the challenges, the adversity that we face on a daily basis? And I refer not just to what we see globally amongst the Jewish people, but privately, whether it's in our homes, whether it's singles who are still looking for their beshet, whether it's friends or family who have experienced a medical setback, others are struggling with parnasa to pay the bills, marriage, it's unbelievable that I remember 20 years ago, 25 years ago, living in England, in a secular society, amongst secular Jews, to hear of a Jewish family becoming divorced, it was shocking, in a secular society. And today it's seeping into the Torah community, internationally. And we find Tzar Gidul Bonim, raising our kids, has never been so difficult. And yet, isn't it amazing that there is no time in history where there has been available to us so much information on health, finances, relationships, workshops and tapes and books galore, professionals in helping families, parents bonding, family therapy, thousands and thousands of books and tapes, seminars across the world on raising children. One would surely expect, with all this information and the clarity that comes with it, and plenty of it is practical strategies, one would surely expect that as a result, there'd be happier relationships, it would be easier to raise our children, there'd be more financial security, and we'd enjoy more health. And yet we find, sadly, there's more pain in marriage than ever before, more pain in raising our children, more confusion about health. You can go outside to Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. If you read every magazine and book on health, will you come out with more clarity or confusion? If we go to every seminar that's available on financial security, how to invest, how to spend, how to earn, how to spend less than we earn, will we come out with more confusion or clarity? We see that everyone's still struggling. Where are we supposed to turn? And it doesn't stop there. A generation ago, there was no such thing, at least we didn't notice it on the surface, as fallout. That our own children in the Torah community, in small numbers, and now it's becoming in the hundreds, and now in thousands, on the streets, disinterested, don't understand the beauty of Judaism, and they came from Torah homes. So when we talk about adversity in these times, I wonder if there has ever been a time in Jewish history where so much in such a short amount of time can be found in the homes and communities across the world. And as Rabbi Krohn pointed out, now we have the media, the entire world, seeping into the front rooms of Jewish homes, telling us their values, slapping us across the faces as we walk into the streets, and magazine covers are open to our children, our wives, our husbands, to see hours every day. And we haven't even mentioned the silent Holocaust of assimilation. In America, about 15 years ago, there were 6 million Jews. Today, slightly over 3 million. In England, when I left England 15 years ago, there was 500,000 Jews. Today, there's slightly over 250,000 Jews. And it's assimilation. Unbelievable. Our Gedolim tell us, every single sign is surfacing that we are in the days of Mashiach. But we still have to find meaning in the adversity and the challenges that face us. We're in good company. Moshe Rabbeinu had the question, and it's mentioned in the Medrash, a beautiful story I'll share with you. In the Medrash on Perek Lamed Gimel in Shmos, in Kitisa, he asked the question, how can it be that tzaddikim, righteous individuals, following the Torah would suffer, and Rishoyim could prosper? And Hashem gave the following mashal. He said to Moshe Rabbeinu, stand on top of this mountain, look down, tell me what you see. And he sees a well. And at the well, Reuven comes to the well and starts drinking. And as he drinks, he drops his wallet without realizing it. Finishes drinking, walks away. Shimon comes to the well. Wow! He finds a wallet, opens it up full of cash. Elu Metzias Shalai. He walks away richer. Levi arrives at the well. And he's innocently drinking. Meanwhile, Reuven realizes his wallet's missing. Maybe I dropped it by the well. He rushes back to the well to find Levi drinking, and with an accusative tone in his voice says, did you see any money on the floor around here? And Levi says, I don't know what you're talking about. And Reuven doesn't believe him and gets into a fist fight and punches him in a way that kills Levi. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, Rabbeinu Shleilam, I've got more questions than I started with. And Hashem says back, Moshe Rabbeinu, don't make judgment so fast. You are only here for 5 minutes of the movie. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go to any movies, but I'm just giving you the mashal, embellishing it somewhat. You have to play the tape back another 5 minutes, and you will discover, who is this Reuven? Reuven is a thief. Reuven, who lost his wallet, actually stole that amount of money from Shimon. And Hashem is now unfolding events so that Shimon, the finder of this money, gets back the money that was stolen. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I know I understand that. But Levi, he was murdered, he was killed, manslaughter, cold blood. So Hashem says, you've only seen 10 minutes of the movie. You have to play back the movie another 5 minutes. And we discover who is this Levi who was killed. He's someone who inadvertently murdered the father of Reuven. And now Reuven, even unknown to himself, is taking vengeance for the blood of his own father. The questions can continue. Why did the father deserve to die? The answer will always be in how much of the picture, how much of the movie of creation we have access to. But of course, by definition, a human being cannot see the whole movie, and therefore it's only Hashem who has access to Emes, which Rabbi Shimon Schwab once told me correctly translates as reality. Emes means reality, and Hashem is the only one who has the full gamut of what reality really is. There's a Gemara in Brachos, Samach Aleph, Amud Aleph, Le'olam yeyu dvarav shel adam mu'atim. A person should always keep his words simple, because we are al ha'aretz, but Hashem is in Shemayim, and He's looking down. I'll never forget Rabbi Segel, one of my rebbes, the Majid Rosh Shiva Tzal, told me a beautiful pshat in this. He explained, there's a Medrash Tanchuma which asks, Eizehu hacham, who is the wise person? Answers the Medrash, Einav b'roshay, his eyes are in his head. So asks the Medrash Tanchuma, where else did you expect to find them? Answers the Medrash, in his feet. Well, what would happen if my eyes were in my feet? What type of perspective would I have? What type of decisions would I make? Based on as much as is truly available, or only what the immediate obstacles? Says Rabbi Segel, we are on the land, Ala Aretz. Hashem is in Shemayim, so He has total perspective. We are Ma'aminim, and we understand that everything Hashem does is perfectly calculated. But the true objectivity that a human being is capable of, the greatest, truest objectivity, is to admit that I cannot be objective. The greatest objectivity a human being can accomplish in a lifetime is to admit, Hashem, I have no access to the full picture. We have no choice other than to trust. But the question still remains, how do we find meaning in the difficulties that we see around us and inside our own lives? And we're told, we are Ba'alei Bechira, masters of choice. We choose what meaning we give to the pain that we experience. Because all suffering, all sorrows, all pain is really two parts. There's the physical pain itself, the fact of the pain itself, a difficult relationship, a difficult child, a difficult boss, a difficult co-worker. I'm having a hard time with this mother-in-law, I mean the father-in-law. I'm having a difficult time with this co-worker, this client. Those are the facts. How I handle the facts is my choice. So we're told, which of the two is going to be the bigger decider in how I recover or become strong because of what I go through? The facts of the suffering or the choice I make in how to handle, manage and get beyond the suffering? I will share with you a story. It's not a true story, but it brings out the power of choice. There was once two farmers in southern England. I'll do an English southern accent to help you along. Those of you who have ever been there will know that this is a genuine southern English accent. Two farmers inside a pub discussing the good fortune that one of them has won $1 million. I won $1 million. Hey, that'd be good. Nah, that'd be bad. I spent it all. Oh, that'd be bad. No, that'd be good. I bought myself an aeroplane. Oh, that'd be good. No, that'd be bad. It blew up in midair. Oh, that'd be bad. No, that'd be good. I jumped out just in time. Oh, that'd be good. No, that'd be bad. I forgot my parachute. Oh, that'd be bad. No, that'd be good. There was a haystack below. Oh, that'd be good. No, that'd be bad. There was a pitchfork sticking out the haystack. Oh, that'd be bad. No, that'd be good. I missed the pitchfork. Oh, that'd be good. No, that'd be bad. I missed the haystack. Oh, that'd be bad. No, that'd be good. I fell into an open grave. Oh, that'd be good. No, that'd be bad. The funeral men were filling it in. Oh, that'd be bad. No, that'd be good. I told them I was still alive. Oh, that'd be good. No, that'd be bad. They wouldn't believe me. We always have a choice of how to... The facts are the facts, but how we respond to the facts is Bechira, is free will, how we look at that difficult spouse, how we look at that difficult in-law, how we look at this challenging child, how we view the boss. Is it possible that if I were to understand where they're coming from, if I had a bigger picture of what came before into their lives, perhaps in their childhood, I would not only be less judgmental, I might even be compassionate. Free will, Bechira, means we choose the meaning to give suffering. Where do we find in the Torah the mitzvah that tells us how to respond to suffering? Is there one of the Tariq mitzvahs? And we find, quite shockingly, that the mitzvah contained in Kriyat Shema, Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol me'yodecha, Chazal tell us in the Mishnah, at the end of Brachas, b'chol mida u'mida shemoided lecha, with every measure, bein mida toiva, bein mida puraniyot, whether it's a measure that is beneficial, and obviously so, or whether it's a measure that appears to be a negative consequence, have a moided lay me'id me'id. Be very grateful. How is a Jew supposed to be grateful even for tragedy? Physical pain, cancer, heart disease, a difficult child, a divorce, be grateful? Who is the Torah speaking to? And when we look carefully at the way this mitzvah filters down through the Gemara and into Shulchan Aruch, how does the Shulchan Aruch describe this mitzvah of how to respond to difficulty in our lives? In Reish Chaf Beis, Sif Gimel, Chayav Adam. A person is obligated. It doesn't say Chayav Tzadik, Chayav Chassid. It says Chayav Adam. Chayav Adam Levarech Ala Ra. A person has an obligation to bless Hashem for the negative experiences in our life. Bedas Shlema. With a complete mind. I'm not under pressure. I know exactly what I'm saying when I say thank you, Hashem. Baruch Dayana Emes. Ubenefesh Chafetza. Willingly. Kederech. In the same way, Shemivarech Besimcha Alatova. In the same way that a Jew says, Baruch Shechianu, or Baruch Atovei Ameitiv, for something that is a happiness in his life, that's the emotion that a Jew is obligated to have when they're having a difficulty with their spouse, their child, a career, a medical setback. Why? Ki ara le'ov de Hashem. Because when negative experiences happen to Jews who are serving Hashem, he simchasam, it's a cause for joy. V'toivasam, it's their benefit. Kivet shemekabel me'ava mashugaza, I love Hashem, because they're accepting it lovingly. Who is Shulchan Aruch talking to? It doesn't say tzaddikim, it doesn't say chassidim, it doesn't say yesharim, it says chayav adam, simple people. Says the Mishnah Berurah, kederech shemavarech besimcha ala toiva, means ki be'emes kol yesurin bein beguf bein b'mamon. No matter what negative consequences a person feels in their lives, whether it's a financial setback, whether it's a physical setback, hu akol kapara ala voinos, it's all considered beneficial. It wipes out our mistakes. That a person shouldn't, has for shalom, suffer more in Olam Haba. There it's much worse. But we're still left with the question, how does a Jew who says, you know what, I'm going through a difficult time with this kid, I'm having a very hard time in this career, and he opens up in the table of contents and finds this, is it going to say, oh no, now I know, thank you Hashem, and he gets excited? Is this realistic? And I asked this question to my Rebbe, Rabbi Greenwald in Montsi, and he gave the following answer. What is Shulchan Aruch? Is it a reference sefer that belongs on the shelf, and that when we have a shaila, you know, let's look up the table of contents and figure out how we're supposed to behave as Jews? Or is this sefer meant to be my manual that I study in advance, so that before Shabbos comes, I've studied Shabbos, Yom Tov, Chanukah, Purim? If I use this as a reference, I won't be prepared. I won't have told myself in advance that the obligation of a Jew is to be meida behoidah, to be grateful for when things go wrong. The Code of Jewish Law is here as a manual for training. But I ask, is that still realistic for us? Let's look for a few moments at our greatest role models in Jewish history and ask ourselves, did they become who they became because of incredible financial security, amazing supportive families, loving spouse, wonderful homes? Let's start looking carefully and see what builds a person. Avraham Avinu, betrayed by his father. Psychologists claim that the deepest pain a person can experience in a relationship between a child and a parent is betrayal. It goes deeper than anything else. Avraham Avinu was betrayed by his father, Tim Nimrod. He spent how many years in a dungeon, in a pit? 10 years. Did he have reason to feel bitter? Absolutely. Thrown in a furnace. Put through 10 tests, a famine. His emuna was constantly tested. And finally, he does the right thing and is willingly, lovingly, is going to sacrifice his own son. And we're told the Nisayon didn't stop at the fact that he was willing to do it. The Nisayon was far deeper than that. For doing the right thing, who died? His wife, his partner, she died because of the Akedah. So Avraham Avinu does the right thing, his son is saved in the end, And now he has to bury his wife who died because he did the right thing. Is it possible that for doing the right thing a person could then say, that's my reward? That was a test. And he didn't complain. That was the test. What made Avraham Avinu great? Wonderful parents? Nimrod. Adversity. Sarah Imenu. If we were to take an interview with Sarah Imenu and ask her, Sarah, could you give us the deepest, most emotionally honest answer to this question? How good was your life? What do you think we're going to hear? Rashi says, here's the Taich in the Pasuk, in Perichav Gimel Chayesara, that the life of Sarah was 100 years, 20 years, 7 years. It makes no difference which period you take out of her life. Kulan Shavin Latova. All equally good. So Sarah Menu would answer, it makes no difference which time you ask me about I had every part of my life was equally good. Now let me ask you. You're kidnapped twice. You're barren for 90 years. You take a co-wife to share with your husband. Gives birth to a son who's a rebel, a cheat, a liar, a gangster, a Yishmael, and we're still suffering from him. This is Kulan Shavin Latova? Is that honesty or denial? What is it? And the answer is, facts are unrelated to choices of how to respond to the facts. The facts are, yes, she was barren 90 years, but the choice was, she became closer to Hashem through tefillah. The fact was, she experienced the famine, and when Avraham Avinu was thrown in the furnace, I don't think she was baking pizzas at home. She suffered the same 10 trials as Avraham Avinu. But she had a choice. How do I respond? Her Mesiris Nefesh, to be Mamid, Klal Yisrael, went so far, she was willing to let go of her direct involvement and have a different Isha take her place. That was the Mesiris Nefesh. Sarah Imenu became stronger because of what she went through, not despite. And we can look at any one of the personalities who the Mamide Klal Yisrael. Rivka Imenu. Even though we already know in Perikav Dalad that her father was Besuel and her brother was Lavan, we are reintroduced to her. When she and Yitzhak daven for children, we're reminded yet again, she came from Padan Aram, her father was Besuel, her brother was Lavan, Harami. So Rashi says, but wait a minute, we already know this. Why are you repeating this? Says Rashi, Lahagit Shvacha, to tell her praise, her father Besuel was a Rasha. It wasn't even his real name. He was a governor in his district, and he had every person that was meant to be married visit him the night before the chuppah. He was a sick man. This was the father of Rivka Imenu. Her father was a Rasha. Her brother Lavan, a gangster, a liar, a cheat, wanted to destroy the whole of Klal Yisrael, was her brother. The Anshe Mekoyma Rashaim, she came from Padan Aram, saturated with promiscuity, idol worship. The Loi Lamda Mimaseyem, she chose not to learn from their actions. She became one of the four imais that built Klal Yisrael. Rachel, Leah sacrificed her beauty, her good looks. She had a consistent rash on her face. She lost her complexion totally from tears shed because she didn't want to marry a Rasha. That's Mesiris Nefesh, but it didn't stop there. She was Zaycha to more children that were Mekayim the Shiftei Ka than her sister Rachel for one reason. Because she cried more. She was more Mesiris Nefesh through tefillah to have the children that would be the Shiftei Ka. And that's why Rachel was jealous of her. It's not a negative jealousy, it was a positive jealousy. She was driven. And she said, the reason why my sister has more children than I is because she davened more. She's a greater tzedekus. And what happened when Leah saw that she was pregnant a seventh time? She'd already had six of the Shiftei Kah. And the two handmaids, Bilhah and Zilpah, already had two each. So now, her six and the two of Bilhah and Zilpah made 10. So at the very most, Rachel, her sister, who was Moisa Nefesh for Leah, in allowing her to marry and giving the simonim so she shouldn't be embarrassed on the night of her chuppah, Leah was Moisa Nefesh in her seventh pregnancy and begged Hashem, as much as I want boys, let this be a girl. And her reward was the first girl who intermarried. Dina, assimilated. That's her reward? How do you think Leah felt? That's her Mesiras Nefesh. Did she complain? Chazal tell us she didn't complain. Because she hadn't seen the whole movie yet. She held out. And what was her reward? The child, Dina, who married out, gave birth to a child. And this child, the sons, the Shvatim, wanted the child killed. And Yaakov Avinu, Medrash tells us, vetoed their decision and said, no, this came from Hashem. We'll leave the child in the desert, whatever Hashem wants will be. And they placed a medallion around her neck, and written on it was, the owner of this medallion is Mizera Yisrael. And who did Yosef give birth to? Ephraim and Menashe? Yosef, in Mitzrayim, gives birth to Ephraim and Menashe. And who do we bless? All our children, all our sons should be like Moshe Rabbeinu? No. Avraham Avinu? No. Yitzhak Yaakov? No. Moshe Rabbeinu himself? Yosef Tzadik? No. Ephraim and Menashe, the two only children born in Mitzrayim. And who was the mother? The daughter of Potiphar, Osnat. Which the Medrash tells us, when Yosef was caronading through the streets of Mitzrayim, and Parah gave Potiphar's daughter, Osnat, to be wedded, a medallion landed in his chariot. And he looked at this medallion, and written on it was, the owner of this medallion is Mizera Yisrael. And that owner was Osnat. She was the adopted daughter of Potiphar. Dina was the daughter, and Leah said, I'm not going to complain to Hashem. It cannot be for doing the right thing that some kilkut should come out. And she held out. And what was her reward? Dina's daughter, Osnat, married Yosef, and Ephraim and Menashe are counted amongst the Shvatim. She got two boys instead of one. Hashem never makes a mistake. All accidents happen on purpose. In fact, Lashon HaKodesh is so perfect, because it literally is Hashem's language, that if there is no word in Lashon HaKodesh to describe something which we think exists in our culture, what does that mean? It means that if there's no word in Lashon HaKodesh for something, that something doesn't exist. What's the word for accident in Hebrew? In Lashon HaKodesh? Mikra is when a person's forced. But mikra is what people use as an accident. But actually, what's the two-letter root of mikra? Kufresh. Kufresh means to call out. It's called out. There are no accidents. They're all called out. The Targum translates mikra, mizamin. It was invited. Hashem calls it out. There are no accidents. When we look at the matriarchs, the patriarchs, the avos, the imahos, every single one that we look and ask ourselves, where do they come from? Rachel and Leah, Sarah, Avraham Avinu, they came from the worst homes. And yet, they rose way above. Not despite adversity. The adversity made them strong. And I'll ask you, when a person goes through a difficult relationship, what do they discover afterwards? They discover, those are my weaknesses. I didn't have the inner strength to stand up for myself. I was unable to even notice that I had no self-respect, and that's why I allowed that person to speak to me or even abuse me, whether it's verbal, emotional, or even physical. How many times conflict comes before clarity? The clarity came because of the conflict. How many times, codependent no more, we learn to be independent because of a relationship that we were feeding in an unhealthy way? How many times we are told by Chazal, the Jewish people are called an olive? Why? Because what comes out when an olive is squeezed? I know, olive oil. But what determines the quality of the oil? How hard do we squeeze? Or the maturity of the olive? What comes out when a Jew is squeezed? Whatever's inside. However strong we are in our Torah, in our Veda, in our Tefillah, when we get squeezed in a marriage, in raising this difficult kid, who we are inside is what's going to come out. How strong we are in overcoming anger, that's what's going to come out. However strong we are in saying Gamzu L'Toiva or something else, that's what's going to come out when we're squeezed. Yosef HaTzadik, misunderstood by his brothers. They attempted a murder. They changed their minds. They sold him into slavery. He was falsely accused of adultery. He spent 12 years in prison. Did he have reason to complain? Did he have reason to feel bitter? Did he have reason to feel resentful? And yet, what do Chazal tell us? Why does the apostle keep saying, Hashem itoy? Says Rashi, Shem Hashem shkura pefiv. He was constantly talking to Hashem. That's what kept him strong. And when his brothers, Perek Memhei, Vayesha, find out, oh my gosh, this is our brother Yosef. What did they expect Yosef was going to do? Take revenge. And what was Yosef's words? What was Yosef's words when he spoke to his brothers? You like the singing? Keeps me awake. Look at how Yosef, a tzaddik, looks at tragedy. Don't be depressed. Don't argue about the fact that you sold me. Because Hashem sent me for the sake of being a provider of food before you. That I should be here to support you. You didn't send me. This is a tzaddik talking. This is what Chayav Adam Levarach means, to trust that even when I don't see, but 5 minutes into the movie, maybe 5 weeks, years into the movie, I will see how it was mi'itai. It came from Hashem.
He's
the one that set me up to be an advisor to
Paroi.
And the brothers were still unconvinced, because when Yaakov Avinu passed away, what did they say to Yosef? Right at the end of Bereishis, they came to him begging that our father says, please forgive us for what we did to you. And again, what does Yosef say? Pardon me for the markers which have fallen out. Al tirau, don't be afraid. Ki atachat Elokim ani. You don't have to be afraid. I am under Hashem's guidance. I fear Hashem. Ve'atem chashavtem alai ra'a. You planned to do evil to me. Elokim chashav alatayva. Hashem calculated that his plan would unfold and override yours. Leman asik hayom hazeh lachiyos amrav, that I should be the one that provides for an entire nation.
Every time we look at tzaddikim in our previous generations, they weren't born that way. Tzaddik katama yifrach, says Medrash Tanhuma. Why is a tzaddik compared to a tamar tree, a date tree? Because a date tree takes a long time to grow. It takes more than just a few days to become a tamar tochum. It takes weeks, it takes months, it takes years. And this is what we're looking at. The tragedies that our tzaddikim went through is what made them. I think if we were to select one personality out of all in Jewish history that encompasses multiple directions of suffering, it would be none less than David HaMelech. David HaMelech, not fully appreciated by his own family. David HaMelech, pursued by his father-in-law. Attempted assassination several times. His own son Avshalom tried to kill him. His own wife Micha didn't fully appreciate him. His closest confidants betrayed him. And yet, look at who he became. The warrior par excellence, the general of the Jewish people, the beginning of the dynasty of Malchus Beis David and Mashiach Tzidkenu. He's the composer and sweet singer of Israel par excellence. No one ever came close to the Tehillim which he composed. 150 paragraphs. And what's fascinating is that Lahavdil, when a person reads a headline in a newspaper, you know that what you're about to read is going to be loyal to the headline. There's going to be some relationship. You're going to hear details. You're going to read details about what the headline states. And yet, Tehillim is full of headlines as an opening statement about a specific time in David HaMelech's life, and yet, no details of the event. No details! Perek Gimel, Mizmor LeDavid Bivarchei Mipnei Avshalom Benoi. When David HaMelech was running away from his son Avshalom. You read, that's the opening line, you read the rest of the capital. No details about the flight, about running away. Just how he responded emotionally. How he praised Hashem, how he thanked Hashem, how he begged Hashem, the At Hashem Magin Ba'adi. You are my shield. Ani shechavti vishana. I go to sleep, hekitzoisi ki Hashem yismecheni, and I'm going to sleep well. You are who I rely on. La'ira minavoisam. I will not be afraid of multitudes of enemies. Asher saviv shatu alayim. They are planning to destroy me because I trust in you. And we go through Kapitel Tehillim, Perek Zion, Al Divrei Kush Yemini Ben Yemini, referring to Shaul HaMelech, when he was trying to kill him. And again, no details. Hashem Elokai Bechor Hasiti, you I trusted. Hoshieni Mikol Reitfai, save me from all those who chase me, Vahatzileni. And it goes on and on. The same. David HaMelech's song is, Hashem, I love you, no matter what? Whether you send me good or you send me a difficult relationship with a father-in-law, with my son, with my wife, with my closest confidants, it's all coming from you. And therefore, I have a choice. I can be angry, bitter, resentful, or say, but I owe you, Hashem, because till now, what's kept me alive? On one occasion, I spent Pesach with Rabbi Shimon Schwab. And his grandson, Nosson, asked him, Grandpa, how is it, I asked Grandma, that since you've been crippled, since you lost the use of your legs, you've never complained. Ever! And I always see you have a serene smile on your face. How can it be? And Rabbi Shimon Schwab responded the following. He said, I look at it in the following way. If a millionaire, multi-millionaire, gave you $1 million, a gift, and 70 years later asked for $100 back, $1,000 back, would you become angry, resentful, bitter? No. Hashem gave me my legs. I've had them for over 70 years. So the last 10 years I didn't have my legs. But those aren't my assets. I'm not my legs. I'm a Jew. I have a wife, my family, I have over 30 children, grandchildren going in the same derech as my fathers and forefathers. I've been the Rosh Kahal in Washington Heights for over 50 years. These are my assets. The loss of my legs is an inconvenience. Inconvenience? Let me ask you. Did Rabbi Shimon Schwab, on the day that he lost the mobility of his legs and was confined to a wheelchair for the rest of his life, was that the day he decided that his legs were not really a massive asset in the total portfolio? Or did Rabbi Shimon Schwab spend a lifetime counting what's good in his life? David HaMelech spent a lifetime responding, and it wasn't always easy. The pain was real. Those are facts. The pain was real. And there were tears from the pain. And there was still a choice. How do I recover? How do I turn this around? Do I complain, or I use it to be even more grateful? I'll tell you, I met several weeks ago, Lahavdil, Christopher Reeve. Most of you have never heard of him, but he used to be in the movie theaters. He was the one who was Superman. And he built up his body with thousands of hours of muscles, weightlifting, exercises. And he comes on the conference which I attended after his accident, where he lost the entire use of his entire body, quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down. Superman! Humbled to a nothing. And the first words that came out of his mouth as he's wheeled on a wheelchair, and he cannot move one part of his body, the only part of his body that moves is his mouth and eyes. And the first words that come out of his mouth are, "I've never been more happy since my accident. I've never felt more free, because I discovered I'm not my body. I'm not my assets. I'm not my fame. I discovered that if I have my heart and my mind, I can be grateful for being alive. All the other parts of my body are accessories." And he admitted that it took him 5 years to be able to say that. Initially, being crippled, a quadriplegic, he was bitter and angry and felt shame. But look at our tzaddikim, that when it hit hard, their lives were a career in noticing what was already good in their lives. Adam yesh lo mana, roitzeh matayim. A person has 100, but really wants 200. Guess what happens when he gets 200? Wants 400. That's what the Medrash Rabbah in Koheles tells us. Look at the logic. Adam yesh lo mana, has 100, roitzeh matayim. So let's ask ourselves, if he has 100 but wants 200, is he happy or unhappy? He's unhappy. But where's the logic that dictates that when he gets 200, then he'll be happy? Wait a minute, he's got 100 and he's not enjoying that. Why will 200 do it? You know the experience, turning 16? You know what, when I graduate from high school, I'm going to be so happy. You know what, when I get engaged, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get out of this relationship, I'm going to be so happy. You know what? When I get my first job, I'm going to be so... When I get out of this job, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get married, I'll be so happy. When I get divorced, I'll be so happy. You know, when I have children, I'll be so fulfilled and happy. When I get the kids out of the house, I'll be so happy. Wait a minute. What's going wrong that my barometer, my measure for happiness is outside of me, people? Events, career. You see, if happiness is marriage and certainly contributes, if happiness is children and it certainly contributes, but if I make it that the respect and appreciation of my spouse will make me happy, who do I make responsible for my happiness in my life? Me or someone outside of me? Says David HaMelech, Zehayim Asa Hashem. This is the day Hashem made. Nagila v'nismach abay. If Hashem made this day, it has to be good. Let's be happy. David HaMelech said, "I decided to be happy today, 30 years ago, when I first realized, Haydu Hashem, thank you Hashem ki tov, because you are good. Ki le'olam chasdai, your kindness is unlimited. Everything you do is le'olam, unlimited, even though I don't see it. There's hidden kindness in everything. Even in my health, But the question is, am I keeping inventory of my health? Or do I have to, God forbid, lose a major organ or limb to appreciate my health? But Rabbi Shimon Schwab was keeping inventory. And so he knew when he lost his legs that it was a small asset. It hadn't dented the true account of what his true personal worth was. Being a Yid, being from, married, children, grandchildren, Rosh Kehila for over half a century, the leadership that entails, the schuyos, these are the true assets. Share with you the following. We are told that in Hebrew there are two ways to say why. How do we say why in Hebrew? Lama or Madua? Lashon HaKodesh is a perfect language. Why would there be two words that seemingly suggest the same thing? If there's a Lama and a Madua for why, that means there has to be two whys. And they're not the same. Madua, from the Lashon Da. Give me the information, give me the knowledge. Says the Targum, Madua is Limadein. Explain to me how this came to be. Give me the background. Let's analyze for years until we understand where we come from so that I can understand who I am today. That's Madua, that's why. That tells me, go into my past to see and understand me today. But Lama is a totally different why. Lama. To what is this beneficial? Lama, for what is this? Lama Dain, says the Targum. To what is this leading? A Jew has a choice that when things go wrong, I can either say, why me? Why Hashem? Why you give me such parents? So abusive. They gave me no emotional support. You know why I'm such a mess in finances. It's my father. And my mother never agreed with him either. They always spent more than they earned. That's why I'll never be secure financially. And I blame you, Dad. And I blame you, Mom. And I can accuse and blame and complain and give excuses. And I don't have to change myself. Because it's your fault. Not you personally, but it's your fault and yours. And as many people as I can find, it's the boss. It's my parents. It's my spouse. It's those kids. I gave the best years of my life for those children. And as long as I can blame, I don't need to take responsibility. But if I say, Lama, it's a different why. What is this leading to? Hashem never faltered on a promise. He promised that there will always be a benefit for every correct intent. Nothing can ever go wrong in the big picture. And I'll tell you a true story. Rabbi Kron, I think you heard this one. I heard it from Yossi Vallis. Yossi Vallis is the director of Arachim. Arachim is the mother organization of the famous Discovery Seminar here in America, and also Gateways. Arachim is responsible for over 150,000 Jews doing teshuvah in the last 20 years. Over 20,000 children have been born to graduates who went to the seminars who became frum. And here's the story of its genesis. You have to play back the tape a few minutes. Yossi Vallis had a grandfather who was in Auschwitz for almost 6 years. That's almost the entire time that Auschwitz existed. And he was there until the last day of liberation. And all the years that he was in the camps, he never let treif pass his lips. He was moisa nefesh. He would drink water, ate dirty vegetables, but never ate the meaty soups or anything that had treif. And the SS officers knew it. And on the last day, before the Allies liberated the camp, they brought the Jews, the inmates, and made a big circle, and pulled out one after the other. The first one was Yossi Vallis' grandfather. And they gave him pig's meat. Jew, here's your chance. You're going to survive, you can start a whole life again, a whole new family. All you have to do is eat this meat, or we'll shoot you in the head. And he refused. And they killed him. And his daughter was in that circle. And she said, God, If that's your reward for my father who's loyal to you to the end, I want nothing of you. And I swear, and she promised, I will never eat kosher my life. I will never feed my children kosher. And she kept her promise. Her children never ate kosher, even when they lived in Israel. Yossi Valis, her grandson, was a general in the Israeli army. He had over 300 men, officers, under his responsibility. After two major wars in Israel, he opened up his own helicopter manufacturing plant. And he traded internationally. He became exceedingly wealthy. He moved to the Bronx, moved back to Israel. And on one Friday afternoon, his wife called and said, Yossi, on your way home, could you stop by and buy some meat? He stops at the butcher to buy basar lavan, pig's meat. And he's waiting online 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. He told me the story himself. 15 minutes, he's waiting online, and he's stunned. Something doesn't make sense. My grandfather gave his life away not to eat what I'm giving 15 minutes of my life away waiting to eat. Either he's crazy or I'm crazy, but I have to find out why he valued this mitzvah greater than his own life. He left that line confused. The direction a person wants to go in, he will be accompanied. A week later, he was invited to be amongst very few select politicians, high-class businessmen, corporate executives, to attend the first ever Arachim seminar given by Sholem Serebnik and Tzvi Inbal in the basement of someone's home in Israel. And at the end of the 6-day presentation, totally floored, he saw the Torah came from Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke at Matan Torah and gave us the Torah. And he said to these two scientists, you have the most powerful product. You have to share this with the whole Jewish people. So they said to him, help us. We're scientists. We put together a seminar. You're a businessman. Help us to make it grow. And he gave more and more of his time to build up what became now 400 employees in Eretz Yisrael, giving shiurim every single night to over 150,000 graduates from the seminar, with over 20,000 children born after those graduates attended the seminar. And I'll ask you the question, did the grandfather die in vain? Look what schus, one refusal, gained him. Says the Medrash Tanhuma, never ever think Hashem misses out on the slightest detail. Because if a Jew dies 30 years old, and this is the Medrash Tanhuma in Parshas Ki Tisa, Perek Gimel. If a Jew dies 30 years old, and he was Ovid Hashem from the age of 10 till 30, he davened and learned for 20 years straight. And he was plucked in his youth, taken from this world. And he has a friend, born the same time, who dies 70 years. And he served Hashem for 60 years from the age of 10. You would think that the one who's got 60 years learning and davening and mitzvahs and tzchiyus gets more olam haba. Says the Medrash Tanhuma, it's a mistake. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice means that he calculates how many mitzvahs this Jew would have done had he stayed and remained in this world. There are no mistakes. There are no accidents. There's a master plan, and every detail is perfectly calculated. And look at the track record. In Parshas Veschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu tells us the most amazing prophecy, the greatest risk ever taken. You're about to enter the promised land, and you will not remain there for long. You're going to be expelled, prophecy number one. And you will be scattered amongst all the nations, prophecy number two. Not only will you be scattered, you will remain small in number, and you will be trodden upon. You will become the name of Shinona, disdain amongst all the nations. And at the end of days, you will come back to the land, and you will come back, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha. We are sitting in this room 3,312 years after the Nevuah. Let's check it off. Let's look at the list. We entered the promised land, promised to Avraham Avinu and Parshas Lech Lecha. Check it off. Expelled by the Romans. Check it off. Decimated. Killed. Butchered. Shinona. Disdain in the eyes and mouths of every nation of the world. Anti-Semitism. Check it off. Scattered amongst all the nations. Check it off. Remain small in number. We're still only 14, 15 million. And the Chinese, at the same time that we entered the Roman Empire, they were 3 million and we were 3 million. Today they're 1.2 billion. Check it off. And we're coming back to Hashem internationally, to Teshuva all around the world. Hashem's keeping His promise that every single detail will be perfectly calculated, and we have an amazing opportunity in the last days before Mashiach comes to choose how to respond to our personal adversity, how to look at the world around us, either through the eyes of Rahman al-Islam, the newspapers, and I mean all the newspapers, or to look it through the eyes of the Torah, which prophesied what's going to be, and how to use it to see Hashem's Yad. B'chol mi'udecha means every midah, ra, for every midah taiva. We have the opportunity to say thank you. The two words that every Jew says every morning, Moide Ani. My Rebbe, Rabbi Segal Hatzal, Menshul Shiva, used to say, Moide Ani, that's a Jew! Yehudi comes from the word Hoidah. The mechus of a Yid is Moide Ani. I'm a Moide. I thank you, Hashem, no matter what I've been through. I thank you for the marriage and the pluses and the minuses. Thank you for the kids, they're not always easy. And I thank you, I love you, no matter what. The facts are real, the pain is real. I choose how to respond. And I'll end off, and I mean it, on the following. There was once a king, it's a true story, but never happened. There was once